Hi, welcome to this Gold Dust series of interviews for ICAST. I'm Paul Harper, and throughout this series of six, we're going to be getting inside knowledge, in-depth secrets, and much more from experienced CAs. And really, the whole aim of this is to get that Gold Dust nugget for you as you come out of your course and move on to the future. Now, today, I'm in Perth, and where better to start than with the chairman of Stagecoach and incoming president at ICAST, Sir Brian Suter. Sir Brian, it's nice to meet you.
Good to see you.
We're in your hometown. I think it makes sense to start at the start. Take us back to the very beginning of Sir Brian Suter's life, and then can we lead into your business and how it grew?
Sure. Well, I was the third child in the family, and apparently they were very excited about my arrival because I got the family extra points to get a council house. So if you had an extra child, you were able to get a council house at that time. So I was brought up in a council housing estate, and I went to the Perth Academy, and my father was a bus driver. And so I was pretty interested in public transport, but I was also interested in accounting. I failed science at the school and was switched to an accounting course, which is what they did with people that weren't so bright in these days. Right. And then I just loved the accounting course. And actually, I ended up getting the award for accounts and economics at the school. And then from then, I went on to university.
And it's no coincidence that your dad was a bus driver and it brought you into this interest in transport there, where you've made your name. But looking back, you say you weren't very good at school. Was that in general, or when it came to, you say you loved numbers?
Yeah, I just, I seem to have an academic problem with science, and I wasn't really a great lover of learning, if I'm being honest. But somehow when you put pound signs behind it, it became very interesting for me. Mm-hmm. And that was something I was able to do.
Now, you mentioned a council house to me very earlier on. Do you think that grounding that you had during early life has helped you through your career?
Yeah, I think I would describe us as aspiring working class, and I think that we had some really great values, and you know, we were working from when we were very young, so there was a very good work ethic in the area, in the home that I lived in. So I think it was a really good grounding.
Let's talk about your CA qualification, how we went through. Were you top of the class?
No, I wasn't. but I did surprise people quite a bit because I went to the College of Technology in Dundee to do my first course because I didn't have an O-level in maths and I couldn't get to university without O-level maths. So I actually did what was a commercial teaching qualification, and on that course I did a whole lot of different types of accounts. Then I went on to university and I got into second year at Strathclyde because of my previous course, and I did my degree in 2 years. And so when it came to doing the Institute's exams, there was a bit of discussion in the office I worked in about who had the best chance of passing the exams. And the guy who I worked for, he knew that I had a good knowledge of accounting. And so when it actually came to the exams, I was at an advantage because I had done all this practical accounting work at the College of Technology, whereas some of the guys that had come from real high-flying universities actually didn't have much practical experience.
Did you enjoy your time studying?
Yes. I mean, it's always enjoyable being a student, isn't it? You know, I mean, I think it was... I had to work at the same time. I was working on the buses in Glasgow full time as well as doing my degree. So it was quite challenging in that respect because I got funding for my first qualification, but I didn't have funding for my degree qualification because I'd used the funding for the first qualification. So I got a grant from the Carnegie Trust to help me through, which I was very grateful for.
What did you really have to work hard on?
Well, I think I found the theory more difficult than the practice. So for me, when we were doing the courses, the practical stuff I kind of did naturally and did quite well. But when it came to the more theoretical aspects of it, that was the bit I would struggle with a bit more. But I did pass all the exams. I didn't pass with awards or anything like that, but I did get good grades.
And were you good with deadlines? Are you good with deadlines now?
I hate deadlines, but I recognise the need for them. Okay. I mean, I will work to a deadline. I still work to deadlines. But like everybody else, you know, I always think, especially when I was a student, I mean, I just hated these deadlines. And sometimes we were behind with our work that we had to pass in, you know. At one point, actually, the company I worked for, they started disciplining us if we didn't hand in our exercises.
Which skills did you miss out on? What wasn't taught that you had to learn on the job afterwards?
Well, I think that what they did in the syllabus was quite relevant, actually, for what we needed for business practice. I do think that familiarity with documents was quite an issue when you started on the job, because, you know, you often weren't familiar with some of the documents that were being used and some of the terminology that was actually used in business. So I think that was an area we could have done with more help on. But I'd have to say most of what I was taught had some relevance.
And you're just talking about, I suppose, leading on to preparation. Are you a prepared man? Is that your sort of secret weapon? Do you prepare for every eventuality?
I'm not a really well-prepared person at all. I just tend to try to focus on what I think are the key issues. So, and when I was a student, I think it was fear of failure that drove me to study. I mean, I found it really difficult. And I promised myself, after I finished the CA exams, I would never, ever do anything academic ever again.
But did you have a plan to build your transport empire? I mean, what was your thinking at that point? Because you were working full-time on the buses through your qualification. What was the next step? And in your mind, what did you have planned out?
Well, I never really had a plan. I'm just an opportunist. And when it was an opportunity that came up, and I thought, this is a really interesting opportunity. Because what happened was Margaret Thatcher deregulated long-distance buses. That was the first step. And then later on, they privatised everything. So that opening up of the market was a unique opportunity. And I just thought, this is exciting. I can see an opportunity to do this. And I had worked as an accountant in Aberdeen and knew how difficult it was to get public transport up and down to Aberdeen. Despite all this oil boom, infrastructure really hadn't been developed. So I just thought it's a great opportunity to provide bus services. And there was a big market and people that needed to get to Aberdeen to work with the offshore industry. And so it was just an opportunity that I saw that I thought, I have to do this.
Some people say that luck is preparation meets timing. And you were ready and the right moment presented itself. Mm-hmm. Do you think it helped in the development of your business that it was something you were really passionate about?
Well, I think to be passionate is just the fundamental for starting a business. I always advise any young person that's thinking what should they do with their career is to do something they feel passionate about. So I've always been quite passionate about public transport, but also I also saw going into accountancy as a vocation. I mean, I think it was something that interested me. I liked the fact that you were able to advise people and that the information that you generated actually had a real purpose and a real use. But the people aspect of it was always what I enjoyed the most. And you get to know the people at the company you're working with, and you get an opportunity to sometimes be involved in advising them about the decisions that they're making. And I think that really was exciting.
Now, we're going to talk about mentors and mentoring later on. At that moment, was there a mentor or mentors in your life and in your career?
Well, I'd have to say there was a couple of people, Arthur Anderson, that were really helpful to me. Duncan White was one of the people that was very helpful to me. So yes, there were people that did look out for you and mentor you. I would have said, as far as business was concerned, I would have said that my father was more of my role model and my mentor.
Yeah. And when you look back on those early days right now, what would Brian Suter now say if Sir Brian Suter met Brian Suter back then? What would be that piece of gold dust that you would say?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, I've made so many mistakes along the way. I think old Sir Brian would just have so many things to say. Don't mess that up again, you know. But I don't think the fundamentals of how I sort of went about doing things would change. I think the basic advice about following your passions and, you know, doing the things that you find interesting, I think it's pretty good advice. And also, I'm a great believer that life's a journey, and it's the people you meet that are the important part of the journey. It's the travelling companions that really matter. And I don't think I'd want to change any of these travelling companions, because there have been some really interesting people that I've met along the way.
Is there anything that you look back on and go, darn, opportunity missed? Or are you one of these people that can draw a line in the sand and move on and learn from the experience?
Yeah, I'm definitely one of these people that can just draw a line in the sand and go on. I mean, you look back and you say, you know, there were, if only we had done this, we could have taken the company private at a point in time and created a whole lot of extra wealth or whatever. You can look back over these things. But I think I don't have any regrets. I think, again, it's back down to the travelling companions and the experiences that you've had. And the experiences have all been good.
How important is it, do you think, between the balance of qualification and right attitude?
Well, I think without the right attitude, you've really got serious problems. So I would say that right attitude is really, really important. And you get people that just do the CA qualification, and it's almost like it's something that they think they have to do. I worked beside someone that was like that was under enormous pressure from their parents to do the qualification, and his heart really wasn't in it, and I used to always feel really sorry for him. So I think the attitude is really, really important, but the qualification is superb if you've got the right attitude. The two things together, you know, you've got an interesting career ahead of you.
So I'll ask you this as an employer then of many, many thousands of people. When you've got two people with the same qualification sitting in front of you, what's the difference going to be? What are you looking for?
Well, I'm looking for someone that's got some energy about them, especially with younger people. You know, I'm looking for someone that's that wants to please. Actually, I'll be candid with you. You know, you're looking for someone that's going to have that go-get attitude that really is hungry for the job. And I think that hunger is a really important thing, and that's why it's important that we continue to recruit people from disadvantaged backgrounds, because people from disadvantaged backgrounds have often got that drive and that hunger because, you know, they know what it is that they're ambitious to reach. They know what their ambition is, and they've got the drive to get there.
When you look around the country at household names in business, quite often, you're right, you see people that have, you know, self-made man and have worked hard. But that goes back to your roots again and the decisions that were made. Isn't there a crossroads going back to your childhood that when you look back then and go, well, things could have gone very differently if I hadn't taken this route? And can you pinpoint a moment there?
Well, it's a bit of how far back you'd want to go in your childhood. I mean, I think at secondary school there was definitely a hiatus point in my life where I was going to get thrown out of school. And I went home to my father and I said, you know, they're going to throw me out, but I've got an option, which is to change my course, do business studies, because I'd failed at science, and give it another go. And I remember him saying to me, I don't actually care what you do. You can leave school if you want. The only thing is you need to understand you'll be working. So, you know, you're not a choice to come and laze about, you know. Yeah. And if you go back to school, you have to make it work this time. That's the only thing I'm not going to tolerate. So you make the choice, but if you go back to school, you have to make it work. And I did that. And, you know, he was a... You knew my father, he meant what he said, you know. He was one of these sort of people. He was... He was easygoing in lots of ways and had a great relationship with him. We used to buy and sell cars together and he taught me a lot about business. But I knew he was serious about that and that, you know, he was right. There was no point going back to school, wasting time. So I went back, changed the course, did economics and accounts and never really looked back after that.
So with all your life experience moving forward and in this big year of 2017 when you take up as president, what are you looking forward to bringing to that role?
Well, my predecessors were all very distinguished and very knowledgeable and technically very competent, and I'm none of these things. So I'm quite intrepid about this year as president. What I would hope to bring would be to bring the dimension of an entrepreneur to the presidency as well. You know, because there are many people that have come through ICAS that have actually become entrepreneurs. There are lots of us, and this is maybe the first time that someone from that kind of background has had a go at being the president. So I want us to be focused on enterprise on the year that I'm doing this. And I want us to be willing to kind of think out the box some of the time as well, and maybe revisit some of the issues that we're responsible for, pensions and taxation. You know, are there more radical ways we could do some of these things and look at some of these issues? So I kind of want it to be a different year, where maybe we'll just debate some things, won't necessarily change policy, but an opportunity for us to take a slightly different look at business and the issues that affect business. And I hope it'll be a year where we'll maybe inspire some of our younger people to think about starting their own businesses.
If we were to move to talk about mentoring, first off, is that something that you enjoy, mentoring the next generation? Mm-hmm.
Yes, I do a certain amount of mentoring and I do enjoy mentoring people. I think mentoring has become very fashionable. I think it always went on, it just wasn't structured in the way it is just now. It is important, and I think it's important that young people understand what we're looking for in a leader and the qualities that leaders need to display. I think it's important for leaders that they are knowledgeable and that in the field that they're responsible for, because you can't lead people and ask them to do something you're not capable of doing yourself. So I think it's really important that they've got the right capabilities. I think it's important that they're also compassionate and that they can understand people and that they like people. It's really important to try to motivate people, and that's probably the weakness in most of the leadership we have now, is that a lot of our leaders are not great motivators. And to motivate people, you have to be enthusiastic and you have to have vision for the business. So the leader's job is to paint that vision. And when other people see a vision and they see energy around it, they'll be inspired. And that is what gets them to follow you. And you know, I think that not everyone is a natural leader, but there's some of it can be nurtured. And the way to nurture it is to have a good mentor. And I would encourage older CAs that have that experience to come forward and offer themselves to mentor our young people, because it's a very rewarding task.
What gold dust piece of advice was shared to you by your mentors?
That's a good question. To try to condense it down would really be difficult, because my father was probably my best mentor that I had, and he gave me quite a number of phrases that are really quite useful. You know, he used to always say that if you bought something at the right price, selling it was easy. And that thing about, you know, procuring whatever it is you're doing, if you get it right at the entry point, the exit will be really, really easy, because you won't be sat with it too high a value. So that was pretty helpful information. And the other thing he used to say to me was, always leave something in it for the next guy. Don't be too greedy in a deal. You know, leave something for the next person. And that's quite good advice, because sometimes people lose deals because they're just too greedy. And they don't really realise, well, actually, this is a good deal. and the next person's got to make a living as well. So I think you make good business if you follow some of these kind of practices.
Your politics are well known, and as you speak about how important it is to leave something in it for others, that's almost a reflection of the way that your politics go. Do you think the businesses that you own, being a reflection of your values, has been important in their success?
I think there is an importance to that. I'd like to be really clear about this. I mean, I don't think that to run a successful business, you need to surround yourself with clones that have got exactly the same values and come from the same place as you. In fact, I think really good businesses tend to have a real diversity of people in them. And I think that that diversity is actually very important, and it produces vibrant businesses and interesting businesses. But there is something about core values there that you do need to share with other people. And I have always, and that doesn't mean to say that you are in the same politics or you go to the same clubs or you've got the same religious beliefs. I just think that you've got some shared values that you can have. A good example of that, you know, I would have shared values with a good humanist and have no problem working with them, and we'd want to see some of the same things in our society, although our starting points might be quite different about our belief systems. So I think it is important, and I think organizations that are successful somehow bring these values together, and they get diverse groups of people that are able to work together to make a business successful.
And talking about your business, because it's clear you still really enjoy it. I'm sure some people say to you, Sir Brian, why'd you go, you know, you could go and enjoy your money, go away somewhere nice. What do you think would happen to you if you switched off, went, have a couple of years away?
Well, I think, first of all, very few people call me Sir Brian, thankfully. Okay. And most people that would be talking to me would just call me Brian because that's my name. But but on this question about, you know, how would you, what would happen if I gave up, you know, it's a kind of an illness I've got, you know, it's a form of addiction that I like doing business, you know, and really I just enjoy doing it. I mean, it's something that's slightly creative in lots of ways, especially I like new start businesses. I mean, I started a new company in Finland running buses there, and you know, just because I saw the opportunity, and a couple of young guys came to me and they were undercapitalized and I could see the opportunity. So that's really what kind of gets me going, and I really enjoy doing that. And actually I would be bored rigid if I didn't have these opportunities. So I think I actually need, it's like you need oxygen to live. I need to be doing some business and doing some deals to keep me going.
And when we're talking about the deals, and I can see you're excited about just thinking about them already, let's talk about those guys from Finland. What was it about them that caught your imagination?
Well, what I liked about them was that they saw a market opportunity. They had challenged the existing companies. They had an enormous amount of enthusiasm and passion about what they were doing. And what they really needed was some extra capital to capitalize the business properly, and a wee bit of advice about some of the aspects of what they were doing. And they were ready to take that advice. So, you know, the guy that's the chief executive there, I would see myself as mentoring, being his mentor.
And that's clearly been a rewarding process for you, not being mentored, but mentoring yourself.
Yeah, I think it is very rewarding. And when you see a business grow and you see young people developing along with that business, it does give you a great sense of satisfaction.
From the short time that we've spoken, I imagine that you don't just classify success as zeros on the page. What's most important about you when you look at something that's a success? How would you classify something as successful?
Yeah, I think that's right. I think the monetary measure of success is only part of the measurement. And, you know, I think success will be measured by the organizations that you've created and the products that you've created. So success is when you've made a product that people never had before, that they're getting great benefit from, that they're enjoying using. Success is when you've got a team of people that have worked together and enjoy working together and have helped to create that business. These are the real measures of success. Now, we all know that if you don't get the P&L account to the right place, all of that doesn't happen. So the monetary measure of it is important. And, you know, I can see in the early days of our business, my accounting knowledge was really fundamental to keeping the business from bankruptcy in the early days. So it's pretty important that we've got these financial skills.
And these skills that you developed then are still used on a daily basis.
Well, the great thing about being a chartered accountant is it's like learning to go a bicycle. You know, you sometimes don't have to go on it for a while, but you can jump on it and away you go again. And it's just an enormously useful asset to have to get you through life.
We've spoken about success a lot. Do you agree that sometimes it's okay to fail?
I think it's good to fail. I think that failure is part of life's rich tapestry. One of the problems we have, and a particular problem in Britain, is that we almost enjoy when people fail. The North Americans don't do that. They recognize failure, almost applaud it, and say it's part of the story. I have had some pretty seismic failures, and I've learned enormous amounts from that. And I think also that you come through some of these experiences as a better person at the end of it all. Some of the most self-obsessed, obnoxious people I've met have been highly successful. And sometimes I think it's a shame if they've maybe had some failure in their life. They might have turned out to be more well-balanced individuals, to be honest.
Who do you pick up the phone and call for advice?
Well, I have an old friend called Ewan Brown, Sir Ewan Brown, actually, who's been on my board for many, many years. He would be one of the people that I would pick up the phone and take advice from or bounce something off.
I think it's interesting to ask this. What sort of frequency would you do that? Because we look at you and say, well, very, very successful businessman. How often would you ask for advice?
Well, sometimes it's not even just about advice. Sometimes in business, it's just about someone else to talk to. And, you know, I went into business with my sister. We talk a lot about things. She would talk to me about what she's doing. I'll talk to her about things that I'm doing, you know. But I think from the point of view of actually getting, another angle on things, Ewan is my longest serving non-executive. And, he is a very, very knowledgeable guy. It depends what, there are other people I would phone for other issues, just to kind of bounce things off them. And I think in life, no man is an island, and there are a few kind of irregular people that don't really ever speak to anyone else, but I don't think it's the norm.
What are your key traits as a leader?
Well, I always think when it comes to that question, you're better to ask people that work for me than ask me, to be honest. I mean, because I think you can be quite deluded about yourself. What kind of person would I like to be? Would I hope to be as a leader? I would hope to be an inspirational leader. I would hope to be fair, because I think people look for fairness in a leader. They want to make sure that justice has been dealt, been dished out when issues come up, because there are often challenges, and people want to get fairness when they feel that there's something that's not working out. Mm-hmm. I would like to think that I get in behind people and support them, and I would like to think that I don't ask people to do something that I wasn't able or willing to do myself. But I think you would be best to ask the people that work for me.
I know the ICAS Foundation is important to you. How would you describe that importance?
I'm glad you asked that question, because there were two reasons why I decided to accept the invitation to become the president. The first was that I had an opportunity to talk about enterprise, which I think is very important. I believe generates all the jobs and all the wealth in our economy. And I believe that ICAS members are a very important part of the enterprise agenda. The second reason that I accepted the invitation to be the president was the ICAS Foundation. Because I believe the foundation is very important, because it provides an opportunity for people from socially excluded backgrounds to become chartered accountants, and I kind of identify with that because I wasn't brought up in abject poverty. I had a very good upbringing, but I was kind of didn't have a great address, and you know, so I feel it's really important that we continue to recruit people from over a wide spectrum of society. And I think the ICAS Foundation speaks to the kind of second thing that's important to me. Enterprise is the first thing, but the second thing for me is compassion. And I think that ICAS Foundation demonstrates that we are compassionate and that we're not just interested in being an exclusive club where we've all made a lot of money and we're all doing fine, but we're actually really concerned about providing pathways and dropping ladders down for people that are less fortunate. So during this year, we're going to be focusing a lot on the ICAS Foundation, and we're actually going to be doing a fundraiser. I've managed to secure the Orient Express train set, and we're going to be doing a fundraiser in London, and we're trying to raise £250,000 for the ICAS Foundation.
Wow. And how can other CAs help with the work of the foundation?
Well, first of all, they can help by offering to mentor some of these young people. But secondly, you know, if you're able to give a contribution of some kind towards the foundation, then that would be an enormous help.
It all comes back to the number one most important thing in your business, and that's your people.
That's right. I mean, you have nothing without your people. And I think when you show people that you value them, I think we have a very good leader at ICAS and Anton, and one of his great qualities is that he really cares about people, and I would share that view that you get the best out of people when you genuinely have an interest in them, and when you understand them, and you can motivate them best when you've got a good relationship with them.
ICAS has been promoting the ethical importance of the power of one over the last couple of years. What's your view on that?
Well, I think that the power of one is one of the kind of special things that ICAS has done over the last few years. And when you qualify, you realise that you're going to come up against ethical dilemmas in the job. And, you know, I've had my share of them over my years of practice and experience. And what the power of one says is really that it's down to the individual to make these ethical decisions, and not to kind of try to pass it on to someone else, but to take personal responsibility for it and be willing to take the consequences of that. That's, you know, you will take an oath when you qualify, and that oath is an important oath because you are promising to behave in an ethical manner. And that sometimes for some people sail through life and they never have that dilemma. But for most of us, there are points when we do have dilemmas and we have to look inside ourselves and say, what is the right thing to do here? And I think the Power of One has been a very interesting initiative, and I hope that we keep it going for the next few years.
And do you have any aims or aspirations for how to advance that?
I just think it's important to keep it in the forefront of everyone's thinking. I don't think we need to do more than that at this point in time. But during my year, I hope to have a very open dialogue about some of these ethical dilemmas, because I think honesty has got to be the starting point for us in this. And there are times when there are difficult decisions, there are grey areas, and we don't always get it right. But I think to be open and honest are really important prerequisites when we take that oath.
Well, Brian, I want to say thank you for sharing your career insights and the sprinkling of gold dust with us today. Thank you for having us at your HQ here in Perth, and good luck with 2017 and all it brings. And I look forward to welcoming you to the next in our series of gold dust. Please make sure you like and share this with colleagues in your social network and in your network. Till next time, thanks for watching.